This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. In the next few months, you might begin to hear more and more of this.
It doesn't matter, Bobcat, that you wear a big hat. In a land so full of sunshine, there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't matter, Bobcat, that you're not posh or...
Why should you vote Pauline Hanson's One Nation at this election? It's because I've got the guts to say what you're thinking.
Tax. Taxing. Tax, tax, tax. We're spending. Big spending.
The Liberals have spent 5 years fighting each other. And now, with 5 weeks to go till the election, they're still at it.
Yes, an election typically comes with a lot of political ads. But this time, well before the campaign proper begins, we're already seeing some parties spend big. With Clive Palmer, chairman of the United Australia Party, vowing to spend more than $80 million on his party's campaign, which would make it the most expensive in Australian history. These claims have triggered concern amongst integrity experts about the sheer amount of money being poured into these campaigns. And some are calling for simple reforms to remove the influence of money in federal politics. Today, the dangers of big money and political ads. It's Monday, the 28th of February. So, Chris, can you tell me a little bit about Clive Palmer and his political party, United Australia Party?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think most people who are listening to this would have come across Clive Palmer in one form or another.
Christopher Norse is a reporter for Guardian Australia.
He is obviously an Australian businessman, a politician, once sat in the lower house, and he's also the chairman of the United Australia Party. The thing that's kind of crucial here is that Palmer is rich. He's extremely rich. He's a billionaire. Back in May 2021, his net worth was estimated to be around $13 billion, not an insignificant amount by any stretch.
Wow.
Palmer uses a lot of this money to put it into his political party, the UAP. He's tried time and time again in recent elections to get the UAP seats in the Senate and in the lower house. Despite that, his party still came really nowhere near winning a single seat. So currently they do have a representative in Parliament through Craig Kelly. Now, he was not elected as a UAP candidate. He defected from the coalition to the UAP, but he is their only member in Parliament at the moment. So the UAP itself, in terms of its politics, it's very populist. It leans towards the right. It runs on currently on a really sort of anti-government, anti-lockdown platform. So a lot of the messaging you'll see on their various communications, including their website, would be, you know, no mandatory vaccinations, no vaccine passports, lockdowns destroy jobs, and we can never trust the Liberals or Labor again.
You mentioned the ads from the United Australia Party. I think a lot of people's first point of contact with this party would be their political ads. Can you paint a picture of some of these ads?
Yeah. I mean, in a way, I don't think I need to. They're pretty ubiquitous and they're really instantly recognisable. So they have a yellow and black colour scheme. You know, you see them on billboards, TV ads, Facebook and Google. They're everywhere on YouTube. It's always this same colour scheme. And they have, at the moment, really a lot of the similar sort of phrasing.
I am leading the United Australia Party at the next federal election.
Freedom is a big one. Can't trust Labor and Liberals. The slogan they've been using the past few years is Make Australia Great, which is obviously a tip of the hat to Donald Trump.
Life and jobs. Protect freedom of speech. Choices for all Australians.
One that's running now pictures Kelly telling the government,
get the army off the streets and free our citizens. The coalition between Labor and Liberals destroys your rights and freedoms.
And typically, you know, that you see these phrases at the end of a TV ad or they're placed next to a picture of Australia or, you know, with an Australian flag kind of fluttering in the background. So, you know, that's kind of the general tenor of these ads, very heavy on the Australiana.
Together, we can take our country back. Together, we can achieve a new government. We can never trust Liberals or Labor again.
Right, so if these ads are so ubiquitous, as you say. How much money is Clive Palmer spending on them at the moment?
Well, we don't know precisely, but what we do know is that he is by far the biggest spender on political advertising out of any of the political parties, Labor, Liberals, anybody. It's important to note when we're talking about all this that a lot of the money that's paying for these ads is actually coming from Palmer or his associated companies themselves. The UAP last election spent around $80 million, and they've said that they're going to spend more than that during this election. We know that from November 2020 to November 2021, the UAP spent $2.5 million with Google, the owner of YouTube. And we had a bit more of a look at YouTube ads recently in the last 6 weeks, and the spending is still huge, and we're not even at the stage of the election campaign proper yet. But already, for each of the last 6 weeks, he's spent about $475,000 on YouTube ads alone.
$500,000 on YouTube each week.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a chunk of change.
So that's a total of sort of $2.8 million in 6 weeks on the platform. It's also estimated that they've spent more than $31 million since August last year across all mediums. So there we're talking about print, we're talking about radio, we're talking about usual digital platforms, Facebook, YouTube, and others. So that's quite a considerable sum when you think we're only talking about the month since August and we're not even in the election campaign proper yet.
So how does Clive Palmer's spending compare to the other political parties so far for this election?
So we mentioned that over a year, Palmer spent about $2.5 million on political advertising with Google. So you compare that with Labor, which is just shy of $56,000. So, yeah, the UAP is vastly outspending Labor on that platform. But you have to remember that that is just one platform. It's the one that UAP relies on the most. They're very heavy on YouTube ads and Google ads. But, you know, even if we look over at Facebook, there still is a discrepancy. So Labor spent over a three-month period last year about $107,000 on Facebook ads. Over the same time period, the Liberals were spending about $42,000. You compare that to the UAP, which spent up to $269,000. So, you know, it's outspending both Labor and Liberals combined on Facebook as well. I mean, when you look at those numbers side by side, you know, Labor and Liberals are honestly a drop in the ocean compared to the spending of the UAP. They're just not comparable in any way.
You mentioned that Palmer spent, you know, $80 million overall on his campaign last time. I'm wondering how much of that money went towards advertising during the last federal election.
Yeah, look, a huge amount of it went towards advertising. In the lead up to the 2019 federal election, there was an assessment of Palmer's expenditure, which was undertaken for Labor by external consultants. They developed a report on his spending. And that report cited Nielsen data, and it showed the top advertising spenders in Australia between June 2018 and May 2019. And would you know, UAP was sixth on that list out of all the advertising spenders in Australia with a spend of about $67 million. So just to put that figure in context, not a single other political party made it to the top 50.
Right. It's basically Bing Lee, Harvey Norman and Palmer, I imagine.
Right. So you've got all these major companies with their huge advertising spends, and then you've got Clive Palmer and the UAP, you know, sort of sandwiched in at number six, which is remarkable, absolutely remarkable.
Right. And the reason some people found this particularly alarming is that they weren't just ads spruiking his party, right? Can you tell me about that?
You know, Palmer, a lot of people remember that in the week before the 2019 election, he really swung the tenor of his ads, and then they started to attack Labor almost uniformly. So, you know, you had ads like,
after companies pay tax, Labor wants to tax the shareholders as well and make 4 million elderly Australians homeless and destitute. Protect and defend our senior citizens.
You know, shortened taxes will destroy Australian lives.
80 kilometres south of Karratha and the existing Karratha Airport in the Pilbara, the Chinese communist government-owned companies, with the help of the Labor Party, built and constructed a private jet airport.
Labor sold the airport to China for $1.
The Chinese Chinese communist government won't allow Australians or any Australian company to control ports or airports in China. Why should Bill Shorten or Mark McGowan allow them to control our strategic assets?
And we saw these ads really kind of spike in the lead up to that polling day. You know, there was a huge increase in circulation. And then in that final week of the campaign, Palmer spent more than $8 million in a week alone just to saturate that advertising.
We also saw some intense political ads from other parties during this time. Can you remind us about some of them?
Yeah, look, it really was an intense campaign for ads, particularly social media ads and social media content. I mean, we saw a whole bunch of people from the major political parties to fringe groups online propagating these false and exaggerated claims. One of the most really scandalous claims that people might remember was that Labor was supposedly introducing a death tax after the election if they won government.
Labor's death tax will kill your family's wealth. No to death tax. No to death tax.
Labor's racked up $120 billion of state debt. Labor is imposing 20% death tax. Labor is bringing back death duties. Stop the death tax.
Labor, it's the bill Australia can't afford.
That message about Labor's death tax really got a lot of reception in the electorate. A lot of people were talking about this concept of a death tax. And we saw, you know, not only sort of Facebook content being circulated, but we also saw Facebook users get direct messages warning them, you know, that the Labor, the Greens and the unions have signed an agreement to introduce a 40% inheritance tax.
And the idea behind this was basically, watch out for your inheritance. Labor is coming to take it. Is that right?
Yeah, right. And it's like, I mean, that's kind of a deeply emotive issue for people. You know, you're going to get a real visceral reaction when somebody tells you, hey, this political party is coming to take your inheritance or, you know, steal your family's money. I mean, you know the kind of reaction you're going to get from a voter when you tell them that.
Was there any truth to this, Chris? Was this an actual Labor policy?
No, there was never any suggestion from Labor that they were going to introduce a death tax. It simply wasn't part of their policy platform. They came out and made explicit denials of this and said, you know, we haven't hatched any secret plan to introduce an inheritance tax. But that didn't really seem to stem the tide, so to speak.
So it seems like there's a lot of issues here with political ads. But I'm wondering, is all of what you've just described legal in Australia?
Yes, it is. The question, though, isn't so much about whether it's legal, it's whether it's ethical. And we've seen a bunch of calls from integrity experts, from groups like the AEC, you know, who say we need to reform the entire political campaign process. You know, these calls for reforms, they fall into two distinct and quite separate camps. The first is truth in political advertising. There have been calls for years now to regulate political advertising to ensure that false claims like the death tax line can't be allowed to spread. The other is around the sheer amount of money being spent, so not just on ads but on campaigns altogether. And these, you know, these sort of calls for reform go a long, long way back. You know, way back in 2007, Kevin Rudd described pre-election government advertising as a sick cancer within our system and a cancer on our democracy. And that kind of sentiment was backed up by Labor leader Anthony Albanese, who said,
But I don't know of any union that spent $80 million on a campaign, or any individual or any business apart from Clive Palmer. This is an extraordinary abuse, but what we need is transparency. So we need real-time donation reforms and disclosure. Why is it we're finding out now how much Clive
Next,
Palmer put in?
Next, how to limit the flood of money pouring into political campaigns. So calls for reform are much wider than just the money involved, but we could spend all day talking about reforms to political campaigns. So let's narrow in on the money. What are people calling for when it comes to money and political campaigns?
Yeah, so these issues have come up time and time and again in inquiries. You know, there was a Senate inquiry in January 2018 that called for spending caps, There was a later inquiry into electoral matters in 2019 that again called for caps on political expenditure, including donations. And recently, the Centre for Public Integrity, which is an independent think tank, released a reform blueprint on this issue. And it called for a bunch of reforms to essentially remove the influence of money from federal politics and from campaigning.
Right. So what are they calling for exactly?
So the two main issues that they addressed were the need for spending caps, so limiting the amount that a party can spend on a campaign, and also donations caps, which would limit the amount that any individual donor can give to a party.
Let's start with the spending caps on the overall campaign. What do they want there?
So they want the federal system to basically mirror what happens at a state level in many states. So in the Australian Capital Territory, for example, there's a spending limit of $42,750 in place for each candidate. And in New South Wales, there's an expenditure cap of $132,600 per electorate. There's also caps that exist in Queensland and South Australia. Mm. And what they basically do is, you know, they limit as a whole how much a party can spend on its campaign. So you don't get a situation where a party can spend, say, $80 million on a campaign.
So what exists in the federal system?
Basically nothing at the moment. So there's no cap on expenditure, and there's no cap on donations either. And you know, the Centre for Public Integrity Chair, Anthony Wheely, who's also a former New South Wales Supreme Court judge, you know, recently said that this lack of a spending cap is actually the root of all evil in electoral financing.
That's a very strong quote. What did he mean by that?
Yeah, it is a strong quote, but his point is right, I think. What he means is that, you know, when you don't have a cap on electoral financing, it allows a party to just spend as much as they can possibly spend on their campaign. What that means effectively is that they need to secure the finances to be able to fund that campaign. So it kind of drives this real need to go out and find donors, find big donors who can fund a campaign. When you have a limit on the amount that you can spend, you know, your need to go out and find those donors is less. And so that kind of gives donors less of an influence over politics. And, you know, if you reduce the need to spend, you reduce the need to raise money to fund that spending. It's pretty simple.
I mean, you can see a situation where if Palmer is spending over $80 million on his campaign, then you can imagine political parties scrambling to turn to very wealthy individuals for money, which then would create this cozy relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the problem. You know, it's like the Centre for Public Integrity is in their report is saying, well, we need to find a way to reduce the influence of money in politics, you know, and one of the issues is that, you know, we're seeing more and more millionaire donors, really, really big donors coming in and giving large amounts of money to each party. They then get, you know, a disproportionate influence. I mean, you know, the parties always run a line that donations don't buy influence, but, you know, they're not donating for nothing. They're donating because it gives them some sort of influence.
How many donations are there from these millionaire donors versus just regular people?
So the Centre for Public Integrity's report said in the two decades to 2021, just over a fifth of coalition fundraising and Labor fundraising came from donations of more than $1 million. Mm. So the report says, you know, to address this, we should introduce donations caps of about $5,000 per donor per party. And it also recommends lowering the donation disclosure threshold to $1,000, down from about $14,500. And the effect of that would be to reveal a whole bunch more about where parties are getting their donations from.
Chris, as you mentioned, this is kind of just the latest proposal for reform after years of calls for reform. Have we seen any success here? Does it seem like there's any change on the horizon?
Look, reform in this area is always extremely difficult. It often gets proposed, but it never really seems to go anywhere. The major parties traditionally haven't supported it, although Labor has been much stronger in recent years and they've expressed support for donations caps and better disclosure rules, which is a really good thing.
I imagine it's too late for any sort of reform to happen before this next federal election, but looking after the election, when do you see something like this being implemented? In what type of time frame and in what type of circumstance?
Yeah, it's really difficult to say. I mean, you know, if Labor wins government, I think the prospects are greater because they've publicly pledged for electoral reform and donations reforms. But even then, you know, these sorts of reforms, even when they're promised, often seem to go to the wayside. You know, there's just a general reluctance once you're in government to implement integrity systems that are going to punish you later on. Although, you know, at a state level, we have seen some really strong progress in recent years. You know, we've seen really good donation disclosure rules implemented in Queensland. We've got a lot more transparency in New South Wales. We've got expenditure caps and donation caps in those states. So it's just federally, it just doesn't seem to have happened.
That does seem to be a running theme, right, Chris? We do have state corruption bodies, but an enormous delay in getting that going on the federal level. As you said, donations are better on the state level. Why this lack of oversight on the federal level? Is there something about federal politics that means that this reform just doesn't happen?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I've always thought what was needed to get this reform over the line at a federal level is some sort of giant scandal that brings down a prime minister or you know, a deputy prime minister. But we have seen really big scandals in recent years on this integrity front, and yet we still haven't seen reform. So I think the more that we see sort of Palmer and his huge spend come in and influence electoral outcomes, the more likely we are to see at least motivation and momentum towards expenditure caps and donation caps. But it's difficult to say.
What is the risk ultimately if this system is just never reformed?
Well, the risk is clear, and the risk is that, you know, we allow money to have a disproportionate impact on our elections and our democracy. And that's not something I think anybody wants. You don't want a situation where the person who has the deepest pockets can have the biggest impact on an election.
That was Guardian Australia reporter Christopher Norse. Chris does a lot of reporting on money and politics. You can check that out at theguardian.com, and we've linked to some of his pieces on the Full Story page as well. This episode was produced by Jake Morecambe, Karishma Luthria and Najma Sambul. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producers of Full Story are Gabrielle Jackson, Miles Martignoni and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay, catch you tomorrow.